This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 14th of November, 1956. The title of this lecture is Training Methods. Copyright 1956 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. Copyright 1988 by L. Ron Hubbard Library. All rights reserved. Unauthorized duplication, translation, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
I want to talk to you now about what you could call standard operating procedure, but more particularly, it is the series of techniques taught in the HCA course, and the common denominator of these techniques, and I hope at the end of this hour you know more than you did at the beginning of this hour, and I hope I do too. Now, I'm merely going to read the HCO Bulletin of October 28, 1956. The following training processes are recommended as necessary to the education of an HPA or HCA student. You realize HPA, that's a United Kingdom equivalent of an HCA. From the moment of his enrollment until his graduation, it does not particularly matter whether the HPA or HCA has been indoctrinated in the, quote, very latest techniques, unquote, but it does matter that he is able to run the following. If he can do this, then he can carry on with almost any other technique. I repeat that. If he can do this, then he can carry on with almost any other technique. As a matter of fact, he'd also be able to carry on with psychoanalysis. I mean, it just would go that widely. Now, the first of this series is Confront a Preclear. You can all have copies of this bulletin if you wish. This is a training bulletin which simply goes to training activities, but you can have one. All right. Now, Confront a Preclear, number one. This is done by the indoctrination course. The student is taught how to handle communication with the preclear by dummy sessions and demonstrations by the instructor. The dummy sessions are, of course, those six, formerly five, processes which merely assume the attitudes of auditing and handle acknowledgement, origin, and the other parts of the communication formula. And we call those dummy sessions, but the odd part of it is that they're tremendously therapeutic. They're very good sessions. And we confirm and grind in auditor-PC relationship and rudiments. Look at me, who am I, and reality scale. We teach all that during the 2 weeks indoctrination. No HCA student these days gets out of indoctrination under 2 weeks. We just push him right straight on through with this. Of course, there are other things which are taught to him during that period. A clarification, a new assessment of what he is doing and why he's doing it and what his goals are and so forth are all brought in. He is also taught a tiny little bit about the fact that there is an organization here and there are instructors and things like that. He's given a reality on his environment as well as these things. He's also taught a small amount of nomenclature, but these are all additives. And we can add so much to these 2 weeks of indoctrination. Take somebody who is brand new, who has not even had a basic course. We run him through 2 weeks of indoctrination, and we have a great tendency to expect of him everything that the rest of us have learned in all these years. And that is not possible. And all it does is confuse the person so that we keep it simple, and what we really grind on are these dummy sessions and the auditor-PC relationship and the rudiments and the reality scale. Now, that's all we really grind on during that period. Let me tell you something, a little bit aside, about this whole matter of confusion. This is policy, and it is going into effect. It is already in effect elsewhere. It is not probably totally in effect everywhere yet. If an auditor is called in suddenly to an HGC or a clinic, and is given a preclear. And maybe he was only informed Friday or Saturday and brought in to take a preclear on Monday. No briefing on the latest techniques, no coaching as to how he is to run the preclear is to be undertaken. There is the preclear, there he is. Now remember, he's in a new environment. And he's already nerved up a little bit because his auditing results in this particular case are going to show up in black and white with an exclamation point. And now, to this slight tension, and there's a slight tension, there's very slight, but it is there, we now add a tremendous amount of briefing. On Monday morning, we feed him full of all of the latest data, all the processes, procedures, auditing that has gone on and been developed since he was in school. We tell him what he's to run on this preclear, which has never been run on him, and he has no objective reality or subjective reality or anything else on it. He will lay an egg, but thoroughly, because he will be so confused that he won't know which way he's going. So if he's hired that fast, we don't brief him. That's just policy. We just don't brief him on anything. We say, there's your auditing room. There is your preclear audit. Because after all, this fellow has been trained. He has been getting results. And why chew him up? Why invalidate him? Why confuse him? Now, if we hire somebody on the HGC from the field, and we try to do that. We try to hire them from the field rather than from the school. We try to keep actually DSCN level, if we possibly can, in clinics. It's very hard to do, mostly because people get successful and they got their own part of the world nailed down or something of the sort, and it's a disturbance to them. But if we can grab him with any advance at all, it isn't an emergency, we bring him in and give him 2 weeks indoc. Now, we don't care whether he left indoc 4 months ago. See, we just do that. That lets him get used to the environment, get used to the clinic, get used to the people around the place. Gets him so when he gets up in the morning, he'll be able to find his shoes in his new room. Got the idea. He settles down and he gets relaxed about the whole situation. We actually don't try to indoctrinate him particularly. We just put him through indoctrination course. He just takes what every other student takes. Why? That is just to let him find the environment as much as anything else. Then we give him extra duties. The pattern that has been established for this, he's given extra duties which get him around into other branches of this and that than merely auditing at the clinic, you see. He's asked to do some procurement, and he's asked to do some test grading, and he's asked to do this, and he's asked to do that. That is optimum. But somebody comes in, we put him at work, clinic, while we don't do very much teaching. But as soon as this person who has been put work on an emergency basis, as soon as possible after this, he is pulled off and put back through indoctrination again, see, if only for a week. We let him do his job on the preclear, and then we pull him off, and not because he did a bad job or a good job, but we know that he could use some auditing, he could use some relaxation, he could use a new address to life in general, and we give him a new start point. Now, if we're using indoctrination for all these things, it must be pretty good. It must be pretty good, and it is. Actually, the technology of teaching an indoctrination course, which has been gathered together now, is quite formidable. And when we have to change personnel in an organization, we get rather upset if we have to change an indoctrination instructor, because it's, my God, who'll we get? You know, how much training time have we got in order to train this man? So on, because indoctrination is so much harder to teach than an HCA course, there's no comparison. It has so much more precise technology connected with it. And it's a pretty important unit. If you were going to do any training anyplace, just remember that. It's indoctrination as a gee-whizzer. It isn't a light dust over. You make or break that student in that first week or two of indoctrination. And if you break him, boy, you're giving yourself a lot of trouble for the remainder of any studying he'll do. All right. Now, just giving you the emphasis of indoctrination. And that then occupies an enormous sphere in the HCA training schedule, although it only occupies one quarter of the time. An HCA course now goes, theoretically, 8 weeks. We'll keep a person in indoctrination for 7 of those 8 weeks, if necessary. Teach him how to remedy havingness and send him on his way. He'll get results. Get the idea. It's the only technique he knows. It's the dummy sessions and remedy of havingness. He'll get results. It would be better to do that than it would be to fill him full of a lot of processes. Got it? That's the theory, the philosophy behind modern training. And modern training is pretty doggone good. You look at the results that it gets and so forth. If you were to look at the profiles of the students coming out, just as a cross-section of students, you would be amazed. Amazed. The profiles are now very, very good. We get critical, very critical, of an HCA course that doesn't enormously improve some profile. All right. Well, with indoctrination laid aside, what do we teach him? 2. ARC straight wire. This is run as the first process audited by the student on a fellow student. He's out of indoctrination now. He's auditing. He is an auditor. He's no longer doing dummy sessions. And we run ARC straight wire. Why? It's not therapeutic. I just tell you that bluntly. It's not therapeutic. A limited use of old-time ARC straight wire is enormously therapeutic, and after that, it declines by the square. We have found that it run over a long period of time. It picks up all arrest points on the track, as is them, and leaves the fellow in a mass of confusion. So its limit of usability is the discovery that he has a rest point in the past, and after that, skip it. Don't erase what you just discovered, this treasure that he just found of his mother sitting there crying. She was still, she did exist, you see. And this might make him feel very, very sad. Well, boy, if you knocked that one out, he would then feel very, very confused. He pinned her down finally. He got a good picture of her sitting there, still crying. So you see the limited scope of this ARC straight wire. Then why do we use it? That's so the auditor can get a reality on the fact that somebody else has a bank. We let him take a look at a lock. We let him take a look at facsimiles, really. But usually these facsimiles which turn up are simply locks. And we let him take a look at this, and he gets some reality on the existence of it. Now, that just as soon as he knows what he's looking at, we reverse this and we run an allied process. The barest elements of ARC straight wire are used, and then the therapeutic version is undertaken on the basis of, quote, tell me something you wouldn't mind forgetting. Basis of this process is to give the students objective reality on the time track of human beings and to demonstrate that people slide back into the past and up toward present time as they remember various items, which phenomena should be pointed out and observed by the student. You start doing something you wouldn't mind forgetting on a pre-clear, and he starts sliding up and down the time track. So we first show them they have pictures, and then we show them they can slide on them. It is there. And, you know, the phenomenon is a person dives back a little bit into the past and comes up to the present, just repetitive questions. Questions 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5 probably ran like this. Question 1, near present time. Question 2, a few months ago. Question 3, 2 years ago. Question 4, 3 weeks ago. Question 5, almost present time. Question 6, 4 years ago. You got that? It's back into the past and up, and then deeper and deeper into the past, then shallower into the past, and deeper into the past, and so forth. And the whole phenomena of the time track can be observed then under this ARC straight wire therapeutic version, which is tell me something you wouldn't mind forgetting. But remember that that too is not very therapeutic. It's not very therapeutic compared to a number of things, because in the final analysis, it'll reduce havingness. That's for sure. The best possible version of this that communicates to practically any preclear alive is look around and tell me something you wouldn't mind forgetting. You got that? But that wouldn't give this student any reality on anybody's time track. So we just choose the lesser of two evils and we use that particular process. 3, subjective havingness. Now, why do we do subjective havingness? This terribly difficult, abstruse technique and so on. Well, we're just giving him more reality on the time track, that's all. And now we have added 2 facsimiles, not just pictures of something that happened, but pictures he makes up. And we get the other type of track phenomena that we are interested in Scientology. Subjective havingness. This should be run both to give the student reality on the bank of the human being and upon havingness itself. If the case being audited on subjective havingness is a black case, then the student is required to have the preclear mock up a blackness or black objects in that blackness and remedy the havingness with those, regardless of any dope off, until the individual has a clear field or can go on to some other process. Now, we teach him a total remedy of havingness, that is, mock it up, push it in, mock it up, let it remain, mock it up, and throw it away. Those are the 3 complete steps of a remedy of havingness as they've finally evolved and developed. Strivic auditing. In my own auditing, if I take a preclear on, I make fairly sure that the preclear is in communication with me and his environment somewhat. And without taking too much time, then, I make sure that I can give him a subjective remedy of havingness. I patch him up on a subjective havingness basis. Why? Because then I can't get him into trouble. After that, I can't get him into trouble, you see. Because if he gets too bad off, in fact, similes get too thoroughly in re-stimulation, we can always remedy havingness and kick them out. So, number 1 is communication. Number 2 is subjective havingness. Got it? Now, ARC straight wire and so on is a training process. But these 2 processes confront a preclear, get the preclear to confront an auditor, from my viewpoint, you see, in auditing somebody. That's 1, communication. Him find out he actually can sit there. It won't kill him to talk to me and so on. And then the next thing is this one thing, subjective havingness. So that is your 2nd step on any SLP. Got that? That's your 2nd step. All right. Now, number 4. 8C, part A, B, and C. This is what we train them in. With emphasis on A, an instruction with regard to the preclear's ability to handle decisions. This is the first walkabout process and is vital in the training of a Scientologist. HC Part A is the one there that's given the stress. HC Part A. So if we're using this for training, it certainly would belong then on an SLP, wouldn't it? And it certainly does. And I'll tell you much more about it than is on this mimeo in just a moment. 5, opening procedure by duplication, old style. The not-no version could be run, but it is a little complicated. Boy, I bet you thought you'd never see that one again. Op pro by dupe. When it works, it's killer. Now, we give them over and under on the bank, making things solid. That's just over and under. Number 6. Number 7. Keeping things from going away in terms of small alternate objects, with concentration on the fact that this is a havingness process and also holds things still. Just keeping things from going away on 2 objects, on in the room, other mechanisms. Number 8, terrible trio, both sides, the can have for the preclear and can't have for the preclear's enemies. Training should be completed with a very fast review of the more recent processes and giving these into the student's hands, not as something in which he has been trained, but as something he can use as fast as he attains reality upon them. We give him a rundown on what we're doing these days, but we teach him these other things. Out of the above list, the first six are the most important from the standpoint of training. But, of course, the terrible trio is most important from the standpoint of therapy. Throughout training, the student should be carefully monitored as to his ability to communicate with his preclear. Auditing procedures should not be neglected from the moment of entrance into indoctrination until graduation, since it is style of auditing we wish to achieve rather than teaching of processes. When the student is taught data, he should be given a high power of choice over the data in which he is instructed, but he should be instructed in such a way that he can achieve the reality of the data, since it is true and factual. Now, why wouldn't you bother to teach anybody a technique like SCS, Stop CS? Why isn't that included in such a training regimen? We want him to boot himself through this on his own time, if you please. Very therapeutic for an auditor. He'll run it on people. Good stuff. But look, if he can do all of these other techniques, he can certainly do SCS and Stop CS and any dozen versions of it, don't you see? You got the idea of it. But why is this training procedure? Why? Why is that? This is part of this mimeograph, and I'm going to tell you. Because these are the key confronting processes. These are the key confronting processes. That's very important. I'm going to define awareness for you in a way that is tremendously usable. Awareness consists of a willingness to confront anything of which one is aware. He has some willingness to confront. That is all there is to awareness. We're trying to increase people's awareness. We're trying to increase people's awareness. Well, we have a way of doing it now, directly, after 6 years of fumbling around. Why does somebody drive a car so much better if you run 8C Part A on a car? Why can a person go flunk a driver's test and come home, get audited on 8C Part A with no further instruction, and go back and pass it with the highest possible mark without learning any more about driving? That's because we raised his awareness of the car. Just that. Now, if we raised his awareness of that car, other cars in the road, by making him confront that car, other cars in the road, and then just before we let the examiner examine him, why, we had our PC walk up to the examiner and confront him a few times, making the examiner stand there obediently, he would have a driving capability that that examiner had never before seen. You see this? Now, we have increased his awareness of a task by increasing his awareness of the parts of that task. We did that by making him confront parts of that task. And that today is auditing. The reality scale will be seen at once to evolve from this fact. At first, an individual is unwilling to confront anything. And then he's unwilling to confront a line. And then the line and it goes to the terminal. And then he no longer has to confront the line, he can confront the terminals. And then he doesn't have to confront the terminals to know completely, he only has to be able to confront the agreement. And if he can undertake and confront himself the responsibility for creating a postulate, then he is able to create reality. As far as auditing is concerned, it boils down to this. In the workaday world of auditing, I'm not now talking to you about high theory. We can talk about considerations. We can talk about ways and means going about these things. We can talk about ways and means of improving these things and place other evaluations on other things. That's all very, very important. All of the axioms, all of the Dianetic axioms, the processes of thought, the grades of mind, all of these various things. But from the standpoint of the practical, workaday world of auditing, we're not interested in making, let's be factual, we're not interested in making our pre-clear, create a universe, whap, and shake God by the right hand. We're not interested in that. We're interested in putting somebody back in the run. We're interested in putting him into a condition where he can perform, where he can associate, where he can be social, and where he can live this game called life. And that all falls out of just this one thing. Confronting is awareness, is confronting. Got it? It's horrible simplicity. You don't have to accept it at all until you experience that fact. You don't have to accept it for a minute unless it works. This one, however, I think you will find works all the way through. Why do we teach a student ARC straight wire, which, honestly, and amongst ourselves, is rather bad for the preclair? That's to teach him that he can make a preclear confront a bank. See? Preclear is always willing to sit there and wander around into the past. All of a sudden he says, what do you know, I can make this preclear confront the past. He's got something there to confront. We make the student aware of it by showing him that it's possible to get somebody to confront it. So it wasn't just what you thought there originally. You thought it was a simple thing that he simply ran it and the other guy said it was there, and so he said it was there and that was it. No, by golly, do you know he'd never become aware of it necessarily if the other fellow simply said it was there? He could go around and talk to 8,722 people in succession, asking each one of them if they remembered things by looking at pictures, and get a yes from everyone, and still not have an awareness of anybody else's track, because he didn't make anybody confront one. That is left for auditing. Now we run something you wouldn't mind forgetting, which makes a preclear confront all of the horrible, nasty, mean, wicked, and unpleasant things there are, and the technique just saws through very nicely, and the auditor sits there and says, what do you know? I got this guy confronting murder and rape and sudden death. Look at that, I've got him confronting him. And therefore he can then, as an auditor, become aware of the existence of those things in somebody else's mind, because he has made somebody confront them. You understand? The step of confrontingness intervenes. And that is what monitors for this workaday world circa 1956, the awareness of people. All confrontingness does is give us a road back to lost abilities, lost awarenesses. That's all it does. It is really not even an essential part of the philosophy of life, but it is this fantastic thing, a road back, a means, an ability to regain awarenesses. One of our evening students stopped me the other evening and he asked me, what about this whole track, he said. I said, well, it's interesting. It's electropsychometric phenomena. It's been measured on an electropsychometer. You'll find it in people. Psychometers respond to these questions. Tried to let it go at that. He didn't let it go at that. He wouldn't let it go at that. He said, what's this thing called parascientology? So I said, parascientology is that branch of Scientology which exceeds the reality of an individual. And he says, what's that? And I said, all right. I said, you right now are quite aware of your own track and your fellow students' tracks, which you probably are not aware of whole track in any way, shape, or form. That's right, he says. I said, well, then the whole track's parascientology to you. And I said, your realm of Scientology consists of your track, your students' track, and the fact that you're alive and are walking around and communicating to people. Oh, he says. Oh, well. Yeah, he said, but what would parascientology to be somebody walking down the street? Well, I said, that would be the whole of Scientology, except the fact that he is alive and there is some hope. You say to him, you alive? You know, he's asked you, what is this thing called Scientology? You say, well, are you alive? And he says, yeah, well, know that. You say, well, Scientology offers some hope for greater ability. Fella can accept this. He can accept he's alive. He can accept that Scientology embraces this aliveness and the fact that there's some hope for being more alive. And that, in its totality, is Scientology to that person. And everything else is parascientology. Well, he says, how then do I get any awareness of these things? See, right away he wanted to peel back that curtain called para. How do I get any awareness of these things? And I said, well, you look at them, you investigate them, you view them, you make up your own mind whether or not they exist. And so would roll back the curtain. And if it rolls back upon a different scene than those which I have described to you, that's your good fortune. And if it rolls back on the same scene I've described to you, why, that's my good prediction. But it doesn't have to roll back on any scene at all. That's all up to you. Only reason I'm telling you this, not because I'm smart, merely because I've had to discuss it often. And it gets down to this fine point. If you say, on your own determinism, you may confront life, or not confront it, as you wish, and having confronted it, you may accept or reject any part of it or any description of it which you have received from us, and you have actually persuaded somebody to confront more of life. And in that mechanism alone, you have increased his IQ and improved his profile. Now watch that. Watch that carefully, because it tells you at once that a great deal of mechanical grinding and auditing might not do as much as 10 minutes of clever auditing. Very clever auditing. 10 minutes of clever auditing might only consist of questions such as this. We have a young man who has been hurt in a race. He ran off the track and he bumped his head on the steering wheel, or he did some other horrible thing. By the way, from the number of race cars I've seen rolled here in the last couple of years, I believe they're building them that way. But I've seen more cars roll and people walk away from them than ever before. It's quite amazing. Racing has improved. And we find this young man, he's bumped his head on the steering wheel, and we say to him, where'd you do it? Not really what happened. See, that's what he's willing to talk about. Where'd you do it? What part went wrong? Where's the car now? Got it. All of a sudden, the somatic is liable to kick out, because these guys are not in bad shape. You see, what happened to my head bump? Life taught him not to confront his gear shift or the steering wheel. See, that was the effort of instruction. Don't confront me! I'm dangerous! I carry 2 guns and smoke dynamite. Don't confront me. And you, the auditor, say, oh, yeah? Why do you load those 2 guns with water? And why do you have candy dribbling out of the end of that dynamite you're smoking? Somebody says, I'm foiled. Coises. Because the truth of the matter is, there's no dynamite and there's no guns. from a Thetan's viewpoint, that are dangerous enough. There isn't any such thing as an extremity of danger to that degree. It's only when we get into the complexities, the protectivenesses, when we have responsibilities for other things, people, when we've inherited a vast myriad of other problems, that we can conceive of this thing too dangerous to confront. Therefore, it is very, very easy for an auditor to peel back all of these additive assumptions that things are too dangerous to confront to the naked truth of the matter. Nothing is too dangerous to confront for a thing. And this is the action of auditing. His awareness fades and is pulled in upon himself to the degree that he says things are too dangerous to confront. He is no longer capable, he says, of confronting these various things. The steady grind down there at the factory is too much for me. I am no longer willing to confront this steady grind. I just can't face it anymore. I can't face it. I can't. I mean, the monotony of going to work every morning and standing there all day long spitting into the tobacco bins. I just can't stand this, you know. You get the idea. I don't know why he can't stand it. This is, but he seems to have a reason. So as an auditor, I merely show him he can. On his own determinism, of course. Now, he was standing there on somebody else's determinism, probably, resenting the duresses and problems which had forced him to stand there so as to have a paycheck, so as to feed his stomach, so as to feed some other stomach, so as to have a roof over his house, rather than the usual fashionable holes. And his determinisms were switched on this pretty badly. Determinisms were badly switched in some fashion. And the truth of the matter was, he wasn't confronting things. Things were making him confront things. Got it? So it was a no-game condition. He wasn't doing it. He wasn't making himself confront all these things. He was saying, all these things are making me confront all these things. And therefore, I don't have any decision in this. I have no share in this. I am not capable of facing this any longer because one of these days, why, these postulates will win out and I'll just stand here rock-bound forever with the soles of my feet rooted into the ground, growing downward toward the center of Earth for 18,000 miles. I know that's difficult to do, but they manage it. So what you're handling, in essence, is determinism of confronting. Now you make a preclear. Make himself confront, and you've done it. Okay? You make a preclear, make himself confront. Got it? It's very fascinating. The truth of the matter is, you're making him confront things. And you're another determinism. So therefore, he must clearly understand that it is otherwise. Truth of the matter is, he's there under his own election. Where this comes in is, did the preclear choose to be audited on his own determinism? If the preclear did not, then this law of confrontingness, him doing it, is thoroughly violated, and is violated so much that the therapy, which extends from that point, is zero or less. We got this done. Now, an auditor would have to patch up then the decision of the person to be there. We'd have to get him to make the postulate that he wanted the auditing, that he wanted to be there, and that it was on his own choice. It wasn't because his wife or his job or something else forced him to be there. This, by the way, is the make and break of many cases, and it's never comes under the inspection of the auditor unless the auditor willfully looks it over. And what you do in that is a technique I used with considerable success on a fellow. What do you do in there? Fellow walked in rather apathetically, said, I want some audit, and you're the only person in the world that can audit me, and so on. You know, I always feel mad when people tell me that. I'm sort of one of these guys that love me, love my dog sort of things, you know. Love me, love my family. If you're my friend, you're the friend of my company and regiment. You know, very much this sort of thing. It starts lots more fights if you look at things that way. But the truth of the matter is, somebody comes up to me and tells me, you are the only one who can audit me. Only you. They probably usually are merely trying to beef up my ego. But the sober truth of the matter is, they insult me by insulting all of my friends, all of my fellow auditors and people I've trained and that sort of thing. They're invalidating them. And by invalidating them, they invalidate me, you see. So somebody comes in with this kind of a pitch, I usually give them a bad time. First place, I know that they've got an only one can help me sort of thing. Well, that's perfectly all right. As a matter of fact, they used to have a custom in Europe, which was a fascinating custom. The noblest knight, if the noblest knight would touch their wounds, they would heal, or touch their illness or something of the sort. People would be dragged across 1,000 miles of wilderness up to some castle or another to have the noblest knight of all lay a hand on the leprosy or something of that. So it's a good way to get leprosy scattered around. Anyway, the truth of the matter is that this is not particularly flattering. It means the person is so important they need this special attention. And all kinds of manifestations. I always jump sideways when somebody tells me how much the solution of this case will do for Scientology. I instantly get out my little book mentally and I put them clear down at the bottom of the list, which reads, for consideration in order. And they go clear on down to the bottom of the list. If you just solve this little girl's case, it'll do so much for Scientology and Keokuk. You know, everybody has their eye on this case, and it's a very famous case. And so I just put the little girl from Keokuk way down to the bottom of the list. Unfortunately, Drew, because experience bitterly has told me that the people who come in that only I can audit, and this case, the solution of which will do so much for Scientology, are alike more trouble for me and the people around me than I care to list up. They are dynamite cases. So when something like this walks up, I'm apt to be a little bit snide and pleasant with reservations, snarly occasionally. I had such a case one time, and I says, person, nothing but this is an auditing question. What you doing there? Guy walked in, said I was the only person in the world could audit him, wouldn't go through any kind of channels, wouldn't see anybody else, so he just came in and sat there. And I just asked him, what you doing there? That's all. We get more of these cases abroad, by the way, than we do at home. What you doing there? Boy, the person had more answers that were off the subject. I just wondered how long we could keep this game up. I wasn't auditing him. I didn't start a session, didn't intend to do anything for the person or anything else. I just kept asking him, well, you're sitting there, that's you sitting in the chair, what are you doing there? Explanations, excuses, and so forth. Finally, he came around to the fact that life had sent him. At one time, some saints had sent him. But life had sent him, and so forth. And after a while, he says, I'm sitting here because I decided I needed some auditing. And after he'd said this 6 or 8 times, and I knew it wasn't wearing out, it actually was an idea he had come by, so on, I said, all right, then go see the registrar and report over to the clinic. And the person did, as mild as a lamb. Months later, I find out that I cracked his case during that session. He had decided to do something on his own determinism for the first time in his life. Well, now, here's the value, then. Here's the value of these computations. S LP8, in its final form, is simply a number of ways to remedy a person's willingness to confront and to be there and to find out where he is. Many top processes, a great many processes, all of which I will list for you and go over with you and so forth, but that is simply the common denominator of the whole thing. Now, I've talked to you about training and said this was the common denominator of training solely, entirely, because it really is the guts of SLP8 right there. You realize after a student had gone through all of these processes and learned to do them well, you can remember doing opening procedure by duplication, can't you? Wonderful. I mean, wow. Grind. You know, you do that an hour and a half, and I've got to tell you more about that. And it's worse than not doing it at all. You have to do it much longer than that. But the grind to this. Actually, at the time, we considered it simply necessary in training because auditors weren't duplicating commands. They'd keep chasing off and Q&A-ing with pre-clears, and we put this in there as a discipline. And now I'm having quite the reverse trouble. It's almost all my persuasion is worth trying to get an auditor at the HGC to shift off onto some other process. Oh, but this one is working, he says. Doing fine. We're going into our fourth day of 8C Part A. Fourth day, you've had 20 hours of this. I didn't estimate that case, I say to myself privately, as needing 20 hours of HC Part A. Well, he's doing fine. He's still turning on cognitions and so forth. And, well, so this one really laid one in on the track. It said you should continue a process. All of these things have, as many of you I'm talking to at this minute know very well, they have a considerable background, considerable history. Each one of them really has its own mass of adventures. It's quite interesting, though, that number six, over and under on the bank, making things solid, is the least monkeyed with by auditors these days. They're doing it the least. And of all these processes, it's probably the toughest, the strongest, and the basic undercutting process of the whole series of cases. The roughest ones will respond over and under on the bank. It's twice as wild as running engrams. You're just running an engram a minute, as far as that's concerned. It's quite a process, but it's interesting that people aren't running it. That tells you that today, in 1956, we as a group are less willing to confront the heavy incidents of the bank than we were in 1950. Prince, if I'd come out with over and under in the fall of 50 or in the spring of 51, wow! It's a good thing I didn't. You can do it wrong so many ways. But if I had, boy, there'd just been no holding anybody. You've had people chasing up and down the time track, and, all right, what are you looking at? Oh, I'm looking at the doctor bending over my mother here. Well, that's fine. Make it solid. I can just see this now. The blood would be spattering in all directions. And today, we're walking straight back up to that action. I believe it's many auditors have not run this because they have not envisioned the tremendous amount of action contained in it. That is, they considered it not too adventurous. It didn't have too much motion connected with it. Actually, it has a tremendous amount of motion and action connected with it. But it's directly making somebody confront the very heaviest parts of his bank, thud, by letting him avoid them. See, you find the center pin where he's hung up that you get with an age flash, and that's what he's supposed to avoid. You're going to permit him to avoid that by never hitting it. And then you get him to hit everything else. And he eventually, obsessively, starts to hit this center point. I mean, he can't avoid it. He can't get away from it. He just keeps running it. And you say, no, let's go earlier, let's go later, let's make it solid, and so on. And eventually, he simplifies the whole thing down to just letting it go. He just doesn't pay too much more attention to it. It simply releases. And after that, he's perfectly willing to confront it. But there is an extremity of confrontingness that number six is given there. Now, the activity of an auditor these days is governed by a law, which is an interesting one, which says that if you start any confronting process, you better flatten it. Now, let's look why that is. We take any process, which is a direct confronting process, we make the pre-clear confront it. And we don't finish it. That means we didn't really make him confront it, don't you see? He never reached a satisfactory confrontingness from his standpoint on HC Part A. And therefore, an auditor who starts one of these confrontingness processes, no matter what version, and get this clause in here, which then turns on somatics, got that, must then flatten that process regardless how many hours of the intensive it devours. And must make a note that it is not flat if at intensive's end it is not. Because it gives the preclear failure, and it gives the auditor a failure. If one of these confronting processes then turns on somatics, you just sailed into the blue and you decided you would run HC Part A and, you know, get the guy going a little bit here, you know, and square him around before we got started on something real. And he felt the wall and he says, yes. And you say, what you wiggling your head for? You say, it just wiggles. It's funny, I never wiggled my head before. Hurts. Neck hurts. That's what's the matter. I got pain here in the neck. Oh, brother, you've had it. That's it. Don't you see? You have found something he will almost confront. And the action of confronting it is turning on somatics, which tells you that he can almost confront it, that he is not entirely unwilling to confront it, but that something around there says he sure as hell better not. Don't you see? You've just been presented on a silver platter with why people have difficulties with their banks. See, there it is. It's lying right in your lap. I mean, you ask him to feel the wall, he got a pain in his neck. He can do it almost, but supposing he walks up to the wall, flop, puts his hand on it, it's all set, he walks up to the other wall, he flop, and there's nothing happening. Oh, I can keep this up as long as you can, he says. And flop, skip it. One of two things. He can either confront it perfectly, which is doubtful at the beginning of any auditing career. People have auditing careers these days. He can do it, or it is just so far above anything he is capable of confronting that there is no edge in. Now, in any process, you discover a slight ability or a knowledge of an inability, which is, by the way, an awareness itself of an ability. An awareness of ability is a knowledge that one can't do it. And discovering that, we better it by improving his ability to confront those terminals connected with it. Got it? We confront those objects which are associated with this ability, and we will improve that ability to confront. But there has to be some ability there to be improved. And sometimes there is so little ability there, as in the case of HC Part A, to confront a wall that there is nothing to improve. Don't you see that? He's not able enough to do it so that you can improve it. Then you just better do it a few times and say, well, it didn't turn on any somatics. He isn't calm lagging. He isn't, there is no real consideration or interest in this sort of thing. We had certainly better find something he can't almost confront. Let's find something he can't almost confront. Let's find something that there is enough awareness connected with so that the awareness can be improved. Now, this boy who is a very bad case and goes around and flops his hand against the wall and flops his hand against another wall and flops his hand and so on, and he just walks around, and he seems to do it very well. The auditor's actually making the body confront the wall, and a good auditor can do this rather easily. He can make a body walk. I scared myself a few months ago by making one walk and talk. I went back home quickly. I said, skip this. I hear people all the time going around and interfering with the Queen's vocal cords and making her make some kind of speech that she didn't intend to make, or doing something in Congress or making somebody sign letters. But, you know, I suspect them myself, because that scares me when I really do it. It just scares me stiff. I mean, I all of a sudden envision a long vista of being dead in their head for I don't know how long, you know. Otherwise, I'm perfectly willing to confront anything. I suppose somebody someday will have to run me, be dead in his head, you know. Now, abilities are all positive. They are not negative, which is the only other thing you really need to know about anything. They are not negative. Abilities are not inabilities. Sounds like an awfully obvious remark, and I'm sure that it is too obvious to be easily assimilated everywhere, but it's true. Don't process the inability. Improve the ability, and you always win. Got that? You can just skip non-communication as a process. You can just skip it entirely, and you will always win. You can occasionally win with some non-communication process, you know, inability process. All right, give me three reasons why you can't drive a car. The guy gives you three reasons, decides it's silly, and he can drive a car. Something dumb like this, you see, that's an inability direction. We make him repeat the inability, or dramatize the inability, or dramatize the non-communication to make him recover from it. Now, we don't do that with success. We do quite something else with our best success, and our best success always comes from processing the ability to make it more. So, in other words, we find something he can confront and then make him confront it better without reaction. Got that? We don't find something he can't confront and then force him to confront it. We try to pick this up at all times at some propitious point of the DEI scale. And we'll find out that there's plenty left there to improve. And you prove a little bit of a preclear, you could improve something else, and you can gradually wind him up and get him out of the mire. The positive way of processing is to process the abilities to improve them. Thus, you will increase both the ability to confront, and thus the awareness, and thus the ability, and thus the livingness of a preclear. Thank you.